CFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
In a cold, faraway world, a battle is raging between evil and good. From the stars,
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure, TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus star? Ratchet, can you take this chorus back?
Transformers!
Hello, everyone. Welcome to TFYLP, Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, episode number 255, recorded July 22nd, 2017. I'm your host, Daron Land, a.k.a. Weird Wolf. Along with me this evening is Headmaster Dawn.
Hey, buddy.
I'm sure a very happy Headmaster Dawn. After how many decades have you been waiting for this leak?
About let's just say 23 years, so about 2.5 decades, yes. But cautiously happy.
We'll go into that here in a little bit. Also joining us is Megamus.
What's up?
Kind of a small cast tonight. We've, again, like I explained a few weeks ago on the show, during the summer it's really, really hard to get everybody together. And put together a show, but tonight we're live as we're broadcasting. We've had several pre-recorded ones here recently, but tonight we are live. So if you're following along with us on the YouTube channel as we're broadcasting, you can comment in the live chat. Several people in there: Tekatron, Lotus Stark. Hi, everybody. It's good to see everybody again tonight. We've been doing some pre-records and having a live show here and there. It's just really good to get on live once in a while, you know, because you never know what's going to happen, who's going to pop in, things like that. You know, I mean, I'm not.
It's crazy.
You know, I mean, heck, who's dropped in on our shows before? You know, I mean, we've had Richard Newman just drop in. We've had Pete Sinclair just drop in randomly. But I'm not saying that'll happen tonight. But just, you never know what happens on a live show. So, and we also may say something shit, you know, like we're not supposed to say, you know, damn. And Brett might zoom in on his Yankee hat.
I'm working on it. I might.
When you're bored and you're on the podcast.
I'm working with settings. Settings, yeah. Damn it.
Settings. But tonight we're going to be talking to you about, you know, as this podcast always is, we're always about Transformers and the hobby of collecting them. So if you're new to TFYLP, welcome. We broadcast each week on Saturdays, and Brett, you're distracting me. Just stop. You look like you're getting ready to lick the top of Don's head. So
No, stop it.
Like you said, anything can happen.
Yes. We might even have a massive attack.
Anything can happen. Sorry, I didn't have my stuff set up yet. So,
but
get wait a minute. See, usually this is like the front of the desk, and so I got to go. And get my swagger pose. All right. Yeah. I'm ready now.
Yeah. But, yeah, tonight we're going to be talking about Transformers that you may have had as a kid or had a long time ago, and whether you lost the toy, sold it, and then later reacquired it because, hey, I really remember that toy. I love that toy. And then you get it, and you're like, wait a minute. This isn't as great as I remember it. Looking at the world through rose-colored glasses, basically. We're going to be talking a little bit about that. We may even bring up the recently concluded, well, I guess it's still going on, SDCC. Mm-hmm. We'll be talking a little bit about that. May even talk a little bit about TFCon if we have time tonight, because Brett was there. So he may be able to shed some light on some goings-on there. Stay tuned for that. Before we get underway, I want to point out our sponsors, CapturePrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service, where you can save even more with free domestic shipping with orders $150 or more at CapturePrey.com. Yes. And if you are an international buyer, which, yeah, that's caused some issues lately. not
we'll
buyers.
Get into that also.
Yeah, not buyers from the U.S. from overseas, but if you're an overseas buyer, you can get discounted shipping, or even if you're in Canada, you can get discounted shipping for orders of $150 more. CapturePrey.com, great toys, great prices, great service. And then there's this other store. It's somewhat new, kind of. I don't know who's behind it or anything, but
kind of run down, you know, yeah. Back alley.
Yeah,
you know.
Shady is,
you know, flickering.
Shady is crap.
So flickering neon light. If you're in a back alley and you're scratching for some plastic crack, where should they go?
Brett's going to walk up to you with a trench coat, open it up wide, and go, "Hey, I got this for you.
I have got your long rack."
But see, why is it so short?
See if you push on the tongue, the eyes roll back in the head.
That's right.
Yeah. They yes, really they do. They do.
Yes, they do. Yes, they do.
I made a joke many years ago that would be the future of toy collecting is shady people on corners with like hard to find collectibles like inside the coat. That's where the real money is going to be.
I've already started, so you know I'm cornering that market, and I do mean corner.
Also, if you are in the market for some really great shirts, check out RippedApparel.com. A lot of great Transformer mishmash, I'll get it out here in a moment. See, live.
Various.
Yeah. Mishmash Transformer shirts, you know, like Dino Crunch and, you know, it's like a Transformer cereal box shirt. You know, lots of cool shirts like that. At Ripped Apparel and other pop culture references on that site. Whenever you go to check out, yeah, Brett's wearing one right now. Whenever you go to check out, be sure to use the promo code TFYOPPOD and you'll save 10% on your order at RippedApparel.com. So one more thing, and I'm going to toss this over to Brett because we have some Patreons.
Yes. So you definitely need to, let me see if I got this right. That way? Is that right?
Yes. Yeah. Down there. It's somewhere down there. Yeah.
Yeah. See, for everyone that thinks that I don't know from my left, from my right and all this, that and the other, and I need my L and whatever.
Well, people need backwards. To remember that whenever we're, you know, it's reversed. Yeah,
all this stuff's backwards. So I'm trying to figure it out by looking over the screen, whatever, but down there. There is a it's where you go for the Patreon, and trust me, you're gonna want to do it because you get great things. You get to see me. You get to see Don attacked by Massey. It's just great, great stuff. And we can't do it. We've just gotten so big that we need help, and that's where we're at now. So make sure you, as I've always said before, is like, share, subscribe, and help support. That would be wonderful.
Absolutely. You can do that at patreon.com/TFYLP. You know, it helps keeps the lights on each month, helps pay the server bills, which are recurring, you know, upgrade equipment. You know, I mean, if you're watching the video, you see this nice little setup we got going on here. Hopefully that cuts down on a lot of the jarring and the pop stuff, you know.
And if we get enough money, we'll get Donna to pay.
No, no, he can just set Massey on the top of his head.
To pay or not to pay, that is the question.
It yeah. was the question. Correct.
But, you know, I just got a message. It looks like we might be getting joined by Proto Man here very shortly, so hopefully he will join on very soon. Hold on. Invite. Okay, okay.
Stand by.
Stand by. Three, I need two, to invite one. Him. Yes. I thought you could just join in, but let's...
We are too secure for that. This is a secure channel. It's secure. Yeah. You have to have privileges and rights and everything to get here.
It's Skype. We're lucky but it's working.
Really, it's just Skype. I mean, it really is.
Yeah, we're lucky it's working.
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I play it up, but yes, that's actually it. Yes.
Just play it up. We have a joinee. There we go.
There
and he is NWO for life.
I didn't realize the shirt I was wearing. Shit. We'll just put it on that the whole time. Then.
Yeah. New World Order.
It's 1996 all over again.
Yeah. Yeah. If it's not Sergeant Slaughter, it's not wrestling.
Oh, come on.
That's property of Hasbro. We can't do anything with that right now.
Yeah.
The only time I ever watched wrestling was the 10 minutes before Elvira came on. So that's really about it.
Speaking of wrestling, we have a sister podcast going on now. We just started it last month. We do it bi-monthly. So if you love professional wrestling, check out the Fans of Wrestling Everywhere podcast. Broadcast bi-monthly on YouTube. We have a YouTube channel, and we're also on iTunes. It is produced by myself, and also Rick Alvarez is on there, and Chandler and Ashley, two great wrestling fans, and we talk about wrestling on that show. It's not a Transformer-related episode, but I know there's quite a few crossover fans out there, so check it out if you're interested, and please like and subscribe to that show as well.
I just realized something. I'm almost cosplaying.
Oh, God. Hey, yo.
I'm like, wait, I'm wearing blue jeans and an NWO shirt. Hey.
Now you just need to slick back your hair and chewing on a toothpick. Yeah. But tonight we're going to be talking about Transformers. And like I said, we're going to be talking about the rose-colored glasses effect. Finding a toy or reobtaining a toy that you once had that you... used to love, or you know, you remember it very fondly, and then you get the toy after so many years or so long, and you find that it's not quite the way you remember it. You know, it's like I remember this toy being more awesome, but it's not so much. If you are following our Facebook group on facebook.com/groups/TFYLP, Sergio Garcia posted a day or so ago. That he reacquired some Armada toys, and he's like, wow, I remember these things were so awesome as a kid. And yeah, he is that young, but you know, Armada was basically his G1. And he's like, these things are kind of crap now, you know, but it's the rose colored glasses effect. And we're going to talk a little bit about that, tonight. And what it means, and is it normal, and stuff like that. Brett, you have any thoughts on that? You ever had picked up a toy, you're like, hey, I remember this thing being awesome, and then you get it, and you're like,
yeah, actually a lot of them. It's funny. And we were just talking about this before, that I went from, I got all my U.S. and I was going towards the Japanese, and I'm actually down to where I just need a few. But I find out that these nice repaints that cost oh so much money are still the G1 bricks that I remember before, and you're just like, eh. But I still collect them. I still like them. So there's kind of a, it's kind of a catch 22 there. You know, you look at like, I just got, I just picked up a great shot. Nice looking great shot.
Don is shooting needles at you through his eyeballs.
Yeah, but it's six shot. That's all it is. It's just shit.
With a rhino head.
It's shit shot.
It's got a different head. It's got different, you know, the wings are different. That, but that's it. I mean, it really is.
Now so Brett, you need to go find Shadow Maru.
Yeah, well, I haven't gone to the Brave stuff yet.
Because it's got like all new accessories and everything.
So, I mean, my point being is that you get these people that they get into collecting, they hear about these rare things, and they strive for it, and then they finally get it, and it's just kind of like, eh, okay. I mean, they're neat, they're nostalgic, but it's not really the hype everyone talked about. I mean, you start thinking about some of the big guys, you know, like the Grand Max.
I've never owned one.
Lucas and everything.
I've never owned one, but I've had the pleasure of messing with one several times. And if you're a Transformer fan, I'm sure for any length of time, I'm sure you've heard of Grandus. And, you know, I heard about Grandus for years and years and years and years. You know, throughout the early 2000s, I heard people talking about Grandus. I'd see, like, little blurry pictures of it here and there. But I never actually got to mess with one until a couple years ago. And I got a hold of it, and I'm like, it's kind of nice for a G1, but at the same time, it's essentially a box with a head and arms on it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it's like, eh.
It literally is a box with a head and arms on it.
Well,
yeah, that's why you buy a DAG base and save the $250 at the time.
Exactly.
And you get little PVC figures.
Right. So, yeah, I agree with you on that. I mean, there's some things, but then there's others. I'll get into that later. But, I mean, there's some that you get them and they really, really, you know, they scratch that itch you had. You know, and I'll give you an example is like the Dino cassettes that I just picked up. I just picked a set up and I'd never had them before except for the knockoff pair. And the knockoff if you have the knockoff and the original, trust me, you can tell the difference. The tolerances, the stickers, everything.
The stickers is the biggest giveaway.
It is. It just really is. And I was so happy to get them. And you're talking about a cassette, you know, ain't hard to transform. It's not that hard to do this in here, but it really, really impressed me. So even after saying that some of the G1 stuff, you know, kind of disappoints after you go through that, you know, you try for years to try and find it and you finally obtain it and it's just kind of a little bit of a letdown. There's some that will really surprise you and you're just like, man, this is gold.
And it doesn't really, you know, and this is something that we kind of touched on in our private group. Bryce, you know, says like, you don't want me on if you're wanting to have a G1 hating episode. It's like, we're not necessarily talking about G1. This effect literally could apply to any Transformers era, whether you grew up with Beast Wars or Armada or G1, you know, it could apply to any Transformers era. I didn't get a hold of Beast Wars right away. I started with the Fox Kids repaints. And, so I never got, like some of the original molds until, you know, several years after they had already been off the market. My first exposure to the Beast Wars Megatron mold, was, Beast Machines T-Rex. The Dinobot, the red one, that was my first exposure to the mold, and you know, there were some, you know, like Scorponok, he's cool, Inferno, I wasn't so impressed with. You know, a lot of people were oohing and aahing about Inferno, I really didn't see it, and then you move on to the later eras. You know, like Armada, RID. RID is another one that a lot of people look back on with rose-colored glasses. And by that, I mean, they look back on it, and it was awesome. You know, you had these superposable toys and everything. But whenever you look at the skinny of it, there's a lot to dislike about it. The Prime and the Magnus were very parts formery. You know, if you do the combined modes, lots and lots of kibble everywhere. Especially if you look at the Car Brothers, they were Kibble City.
Well, that's why we need masterpiece versions of those.
Yes. But that being said, though, there's a lot to like about them, and they are still really awesome toys. And going back to the G1 argument, you know, G1s are called Generation 1 now. Yeah, they weren't back in the day. They were just simply the Transformers. But, mm-hmm. you know, they're called Generation 1 now because they were the first generation of Transformers. The engineering, they were ingenious back in the day. We didn't care back in the day whether Broadside had no knees and no discernible legs. It was just a brick with arms and two elbows.
Yeah, it was too small.
And elbow getting elbows was a big thing.
Yeah. So. And I even mentioned this in Sergio's topic. You know, whenever I reacquired Cup and Blur, I remembered I loved them as a kid. And then I got them, and I'm like, well, first of all, they're a lot smaller than I remember. And then second of all...
So were you.
Yeah, so was I. But
that's always the argument I tell people. Every time they go, I remember it being bigger. Well, you were also a lot smaller.
Yeah. And right. Second of all, I remember, I don't know why, he never has, except for like Generations and stuff like that. But I'm talking about G1. For some reason, whenever I got back into collecting in 99, I had it in my head that Cup had knees, had bendable knees. And whenever I whenever I reacquired the toy, I'm like, his knees don't bend. There's no way they can bend.
Well,
what the hell?
Let me ask you this much. When the first release of toys came out, and we got to see Prime, I don't know about you, but being able to do this. Oops.
Yes.
Not that. This. You could bend his knees.
Describe it on
his arms, audio viewers. His elbows, all that. That was like major back then.
Yeah.
That was like, this is articulation.
You were holding
and
up
now G1. To me, don't get 26 points of articulation.
To me, especially, when it comes to articulation, when it comes to figures, that the articulation isn't just something that's a consequence of the transformation. Like right. In the case when you're showing Optimus Prime there, right. Him having the bending knees is a big deal because he doesn't need that for the transformation.
Right. But the elbows.
The elbows, yes. The elbows are part of that transformation, right. But the knees, no. So,
right. And that's one of those things. You were like, man, we got 6 points of articulation, man. We're in heaven. And now,
turn his head.
If you don't get, you know, 26 points of articulation, well,
no ankle tilts fail.
Yeah. That's the other thing that kills me. Do you remember when that came out? All of a sudden, like all the toys had ankle tilts, and it was like you had to have it. That was like a staple. Whereas before, man, if they could, you know, raise their arms and bend their elbows, that was great. Now it's like you gotta have ankle tips. Oh, and ab cruncher. Gotta have the ab cruncher. I mean, every single toy reviewer goes, well, he's got this. Well, he doesn't have the ab cruncher. You're like, really? Are you gonna have him do aerobics? What's up here?
But you know, and this brings up a very important argument or a very important point, rather. Is articulation all that? I know we've actually spent some time on an episode a long time ago about that, but, you know, it's been quite a while. Let's talk about that a little bit. Is it the articulation that makes a toy? Can a toy be great with little to no articulation? In my opinion, it can be. For example, Broadside, G1 Broadside, by all intents and purposes, by today's standard, it's a piece of crap. It's a brick.
I'm actually looking for a brick.
Not a very good jet mode, but
better than the one. Better than the Titan Return mode.
Yeah, you got to do some finagling with the Titan.
Yeah, but wait a minute, whoa. Get a good remember, jet. Back when Broadside first came out, you hate to say this, but you really had to use your imagination to get all three modes, to actually visualize all three modes. So there was a little bit of play value, in my opinion, in that. I mean, yeah, you did. And I mean, you were stretching for the jet mode.
That's a large part, you know, of the
boat and everything. That looked right, but
you had to stretch. That's a large part of the rose-colored glasses effect, too.
Because exactly.
Back in the day, when you were smaller, and this can apply to any generation again, back in the day when you were smaller, you were applying your imagination to these toys as you played with them. So you might have imagined in your head, and I think that's where the knees from Cup came from in my head. And granted, this was, 17, 18 years ago. Now, when I was thinking this, but you know, I think it came from the fact that I used to imagine when I was a kid he had knees. It was part of the play value of that toy. You know, I could sit down and I would imagine him walking along and having these battles, and it didn't detract from the toy back in the day. And now, I guess as an adult collector, and I picked it up, and I'm like, I'm not looking at it through the same childlike eyes that I once was. I'm looking at it as a more aesthetic value rather than play value, I guess.
And I think, and I might be wrong, but I think that there's a lot of collectors out there that do the same thing, and they'll grab the G1s and they collect the G1s, but then they go for like Masterpiece, because when I was playing with my G1, Ratchet, I mean, this was more what I was envisioning.
Yeah,
really was. All the articulation and everything. So then you collect both. Yeah. So I think a lot of the Masterpiece guys, and there's always exceptions, but a lot of Masterpiece guys are also G1 collectors.
Yeah, well, the Masterpiece, basically, like you said, the Masterpiece toy equates to what your imagination made the G1 toy.
Exactly.
Which I have heard from a lot of people in the past, because it's their toy in their head of what, mm-hmm. and you actually physically have it now.
And that's why when you get one that they come really, really close, but they kind of miss, you know, I mean, I'll give you a perfect example, and this would be a nice little segue, but when I got Masterpiece Ratchet and it had the little hip skirts, and you were like, oh, so close. But then in my mind that he didn't have that. And it just so happens that when I went to TFCon, I got the nice little Shadow Fisher set, just gets rid of the little hip kibble and cleans him right up. But the point being is that when you get that way, and that's why you get the nerd rage when they make a Masterpiece that's so close, but they kind of miss one little point, and then everyone goes, you know, crazy over it, because you're close to what I had in my head, but that's not quite it.
Yeah. So, Don, what do you look at whenever you had any experiences similar to this?
Well, I think maybe what it is that having started collecting older, I was able to see the toy's faults. Because, again, remember, I was 14 when Transformers started. I was well above the age group they were targeting these things for. And so I knew when I got the toys the limitations of them, but they were still one of the coolest things I'd ever seen, because we had nothing like that. You know, the most I ever had growing up was the robots that walked and smoke came out of the chest, and you had the machine gun sounds and stuff like that. So this was a real big thing. And as the years progressed and I was still collecting, you know, there were toys that I wish I hadn't got, but I still kept them. They're in a box somewhere, whatever the case may be. But I've never really had the rose-colored effect, I guess, because I didn't really play with the toys being that old. I bought them.
You've got a different perspective on it than the rest of us do, I guess.
Because I wasn't playing. I wasn't a collector, I guess, if there's any kind of official – were you a collector at this point? No, but I did buy them to just put on my dresser.
You've never actually bought Transformers for play value. You bought them as a collectible from the very beginning.
Pretty much, yeah, because, I mean, I might have posed them differently or set, you know, Optimus and Megatron up side by side on, like, on my dresser or something. I literally remember when all my Transformers would fit on half of my dresser top. But, you know, yeah, I've never actually bought the Transformers to play with. I am definitely skewed differently than a lot of people who collect.
And by play, we mean by sitting down and having a play battle on the floor or something other. You know?
Exactly. And I never.
Pew. Yeah.
If I had brothers or sisters, I'm an only child. If I had brothers or sisters, even at that age, if I had a younger brother or sister, and I had played with them, maybe I would be a little different than what I am now as far as my worldview. My rose colored glasses is more like looking back and like, why did I buy this? I didn't like it when I bought it.
Supreme Glass Cheetor.
most of Beast Machines, most of Armada, most of Energon.
I'm surprised that you survived that era as a collector. It's like, was there at any point during that era that you were like, screw this, I'm done with collecting?
Well, see, I think a lot of that is from me bailing on Star Wars during Power of the Force. Because it was driving me absolutely insane trying to collect Power of the Force with half circle Boba Fett, full circle Boba Fett, short lightsaber. So I think once I washed my hands of Star Wars completely in the mid to late 90s, I was getting Transformers just for the fact is there's no variants. There's nothing to chase down.
Now there are.
But I'm saying back then, you know, so it was just something you collected.
I just want to interject for just a second, because I agree with you. I think the 1990s Star Wars, you know, revival, whatever you want to call it, brought a lot more people back into the collecting phase because they did target stuff like that. You know, your full circle Boba Fett, your half circle Boba Fett, your no insignia Boba Fett, your
orange
brown vested Luke, the black vested Luke.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, the orange
long sabers, transitional. I mean, you name it. Yeah. I remember all that. But that brought a spark, not to coin a phrase, back into the collecting.
But in reality, when I say to my friends that I've not seen the latest Star Wars, I've not seen Rogue One, I've not seen Rebels, it's because I literally have no desire to deal with anything. Unless they bring Star Wars crossovers back, which I don't see happening, unless maybe it's something they pull out of mothballs as a exclusive or something.
Yeah, never say never.
Never say, especially nowadays.
Yeah.
But I won't.
Does Revolution not tell you anything?
Yeah. But so again, my rose colored glasses kind of thing is looking back and asking my younger self, why did you buy this? Why did you buy Armada Hotshot? Why did you buy Armada Cyclonus? Why did you keep buying Armada? Why did you buy the Energon pants and shirt combiners? I don't know. I was dumb. I was buying everything at the time. I guess I was just collecting everything.
You fall into one of the categories. I bought it all. Yeah. I remember in the 90s with the Star Wars, why I ended up with so much crap was because when they started coming out with these quote-unquote variations, I had to get them all. I had to get all the different variations. And that really, really got me clicked for when I switched over to Beast Wars. And that was the only reason that I jumped on the the purple and the pink Transmetal Primal and Megatron as quickly as I did, because I was looking for that stuff.
Yeah,
I found it when it came out in the stores.
Yeah, because up to that point in Beast Wars, all we had was Rocky Bubble versus Smooth Bubble,
right,
and Cheetor's eye colors. That's about it. But here's
variations of point zero.
There were small variations here and there.
Right.
Yeah, you had your 0-0 and 0-1.
Yeah, but here's the thing, and also Roman numeral 2 versus Transmetal as well. But I recently sold my 12-inch Power of the Force Obi-Wan Kenobi with a dark blue insert versus the regular one that had the other colored insert. I got $10 for it. I lost I think I bought it for $25 at the time because I could not find an Obi-Wan Kenobi, let alone the dark blue insert.
Right, but at one point, it was worth much more.
Right. I got $10 for that. I offered free shipping and wound up making $3 on it. I was happy to see it go.
Right.
Because that was the last piece of Power of the Force that I had. And it, like, see you later, Ben. Well, have a safe journey.
I've said this before, and I'll say it again. If you're collecting new, now vintage stuff's a little different. Don't get me wrong. But if you're collecting new Transformers in order to put your son through school or whatever, you are teetering. You're teetering on that edge. Because at any point, the interest or reissues can make it fall right to the negative. Totally. And Power of the Force is a perfect example of that. They overproduced everything. A lot of that stuff ended up in landfills.
Yeah.
So,
E.T. is pointing and laughing at Power of the Force. It's basically what it wound up being.
But yeah, it's worth more.
Well, basically for me, Duran, it's really, you know, like you said, I have a unique perspective with my age and everything. I wish I hadn't bought half the stuff I bought, but it was the thrill of the hunt, the thrill of the chase, finding the new stuff. That's what kept me going through some of these periods as I was just enjoying collecting so much. But I know G1 toys are not that great, but it was the memories I associate.
You know, there's an asterisk with that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, they were great because, see, my dad thought I was too old for them. So that's not something I really spent my money on normally because I had to sneak stuff in past him because he would just sort of frown and just sort of, you know, they're not what it told you. That's just my dad. I remember the first issue of the comic I bought was issue 21, Aerial Bots Over America. I bought it for 50 cents at the flea market and had to sneak it into my backpack so he wouldn't see me bringing a comic in. Just because he thought I was wasting my money. But it's not, it's just basically, I wish I hadn't bought some stuff. But at the time, I associate the G1. Yes, I know the toys are not as good now, but it's the hunt, the thrill of finding them that first time. Finding a complete prowl for 75 cent in a junk box, and then 2 weeks later, well, almost complete prowl, and then finding his missiles in another junk box 2 months later for a quarter or a dime, and then you have a complete prowl for like $1.25. You know, just the hunt, that's what I look back, and that's what my rose-colored glasses is that I love the fun I had finding the stuff. That's what it is for me.
So, okay, Daniel, what about you? You ever reacquire something other that you had some fond memories of that you're like, hey, this kind of sucks now?
Well, first thing what Don brought up that I just want to just backtrack to is the line that he said, there once was a time when I could fit my whole collection on top of my dresser.
Hmm.
Let's just absorb that for a second. When there was once a time where I could put my entire collection in 1995 on top of my computer tower, man, just going to soak that in for a moment. Anyways, like, oh boy. And then I just think, whoa, what happened? I look around me like, geez, cocaine's a hell of a drug.
Yeah.
But yeah, so to go to what your original question was, in more so in my case, I'll even go beyond, let's say, G1, where let's hit a little bit of Beast Wars, a little bit of Energon, a little bit of Car Robots or Robots in Disguise 1.0, stuff that when I got it, I thought it was the king shit. I thought it was the greatest thing ever. In Beast Wars, I remember when I got specifically Transmetal 2 Cheetor and just being like, this is it. It's the greatest Beast Wars toy ever made. The greatest Beast Wars toy ever made. You know, it's the most badass Cheetor, you know. And same thing happened with a majority of Car Robots and Robots in Disguise, where the likes of Speedbreaker, Sideburn, Prowl, Mach Alert, just thinking like this is what we look like, how we look at classics today. We looked at it like that with that, looking at Robots in Disguise and just how, oh my God. And then the last one being Energon, just the whole series as a whole, me going like, wow, look at all these modern interpretations of classic G1 characters, Inferno and Slugslinger and Roadblock, which was more or less just Hoist. And, you know, just going through the whole, you know, Rodimus and so many of these characters that it's kind of like the first time they've had an interpretation in years, even Wingsaber kind of being Star Saber, you know, like a lot of those, when I got those, I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Looking back now, man, you know, it was what it was back then, but it really isn't what it is today. You know, like, I mean, you look at, again, when I got that first Energon Inferno, and I think he's right over back there over my shoulder there. Like, I was like, man, finally a modern interpretation of the G1 Inferno. And it's just like this, you know, this is before classics existed and everything. And I'm like, this is incredible. You look back now and it's like, ugh.
It's small. It's not really accurate. Yeah.
Well, that, and there, and I find that the entire Energon line as a whole was like that, because you kind of go through every character in Energon, even like some of the Omnicons, like, what was his name? I think it was the one that looks like Skyfire or Jetfire. I forget his name. Skyblast.
Yes.
Skyblast, you know, where he was kind of designed to look like Skyfire's design, which is a mini version of it. You know, like all of these characters were kind of homages to all these different designs. Wheeljack was to be Downshift was intended to be like Wheeljack. And then you had Slugslinger. You had a guy who was called Scorponok that was intended to more or less be like an homage to Scorponok. You had Alpha Q, the whole lot. And then all the combiners, you know, whether it be Superion Maximus and Devastator Maximus, well, I mean, Constructicon Maximus, and all, that entire line that kind of was classics before it was classics. And us just eating it up because it was the closest thing we got to a G1 revival. And now we look at all of that in retrospective and go like, man, what were we on? You know, like, but
I actually recently came into a little bit of that feeling. Capture Prey had bought in some vintage items. Well, now vintage items.
Now 20 years
vintage. Well, I mean, it's hard to talk about whenever you're talking about like 10 years ago now is vintage, but essentially that's what they are now. But you know, some of the Unicron trilogy toys and I was doing photo shoots for the website, you know, I had this big tote, you know, and I'd get them out and put the little number next to it and photograph it. So I had an opportunity to handle virtually every toy, I guess, from Beast Wars all the way up through recent years. And some of them, I remember whenever I had them back 10, 15 years ago, I remember, hey, this is a great toy. You know, it's not as faithful an update to the original character that I'd like it to be, but it was a really great toy. And then I pulled it out of the tote, and I messed with it a second. I'm like, this thing's kind of not what I remember it, you know.
Kind of janky.
Yeah. And then there were some that I remember I didn't give too much thought to back in the day. And then I went back, and I'm like, hey, this is actually kind of fun to mess with. Case in point was the they used it. I can't remember the original use of the mold, but it was Evac repainted as Evac and a Galvatron at BotCon.
Yes,
Shattered Glass. Yeah, you're talking about Live Convoy that was known as Evac. Yeah,
yeah, it was the helicopter. I thought it was kind of a neat toy. You know, I kind of liked it. And that's now going back and looking at, and back in the day, whenever I had it, I didn't care for it all that much. So it's, I guess it was kind of a reverse rose colored glasses, you know,
there's a lot of that where there's some toys that I revisit, and I have a new appreciation for them. I find a lot of the Beast Wars toys looking back at a lot of the engineering of a lot of animated toys and going like, wow, there was really something going on here. You know, that I almost see projected into some of the masterpiece engineering today, especially with animated. I see a lot of that. But yeah, I mean, just for me, like, it was a lot of that. It was a lot of Energon, a lot of revisiting that. And I mean, like, to go on what Don was saying was like, I mean, I think a lot of people, if they were Star Wars collectors, I mean, what was going on in Star Wars at the time? We were going through the prequels. You know, so a lot of people got off of that boat and got onto the other boat, you know. They got off the prequel boat and they got onto the Unicron trilogy boat. And I mean, the prequels are kind of meh, and the Unicron trilogy was, wow, this is the best Transformers was at the time.
And you know what's scary to think is that we're saying that about like Masterpiece and things now. Will we be able to say that in another 10 years?
I think that Masterpiece is kind of like, to a Marvel or DC collector, the Hot Toys, in the sense that I feel that, I mean, how much higher a price point would Takara Tomy be able to make? I mean, yeah, hey, we have a Hot Toys Optimus Prime that's like $500 that doesn't transform, but I mean like something from a real engineering standpoint. I don't think we'll go beyond that. I think that we might get yet another reissue of G1 Prime done, you know, MP50, G1 Convoy again, you know, with retools here and there to make it even more accurate.
Right, right. But I don't, you know, you're going to get, I think you'll see a lot of those re-engineered with more articulation or worst off, more accessories, because we've seen that already. That's a big gimmick now, is they take the same toy and they rehash it. No, it's got a nice little, it's got this nice little pill bottle with it now. You got to get whatever, you know.
A good example is another like robot brand that's been around for, you know, almost 40 years now. Gundam has its own premium price point in the Perfect Grade, and they always seem to somehow re-release a Perfect Grade of the original RX-79 Gundam or 78 Gundam with more show accurate than the last. Like, they always found like, oh, we could do a little better this time. And it's the same thing where, you know, we went from a remold there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, yeah, and it's the same thing. We went from MP1 to MP10, and then who knows, when MP50 rolls around, they might give another crack at it and go, you know what, maybe we could do a little better. You know, and we've had, you know, let's say another 10 years of engineering under our belt and a new designer brought in, and here's his take at G1 Convoy. And maybe it's more accurate to the, you know, episode 1 to 3, More to Meets the Eye miniseries, which has a more rounded crest of the helmet or something. You know, there's different interpretations of that. But I feel that Masterpiece really is the peak. I can't imagine, especially with all the SDCC stuff that was released recently, and I don't want to go off on a tangent, but I mean, the SDCC stuff really tells you what is specific stuff marketed at specific people. Like, you look at that Rodimus that was released, or that new Jazz, and you go, well, who's that targeted at? That's clearly not targeted at the guy who bought MP9 Rodimus. That's clearly not targeted to the guy who bought a third-party Masterpiece Jazz. You know what I mean? Like, it's gotten to a point now that certain items are targeted to certain buyers and certain demographics, and Masterpiece is the peak of that. And I don't see anything going beyond that. And that's something usually I always say, you know, never say never with Transformers, but that's something I'm very firm on, I believe.
Well, let's kind of take that as a jumping point and ask this question. And I didn't actually see this conversation going this way, but, you know, it's perfectly okay. But, you know, for the sake of conversation and discussion, let's take this as a jumping point and ask this. Is Transformers as a franchise overdue or ready for a reboot?
What do you mean by that?
Do you mean
fictionally? Do you mean toy-wise?
Fiction, toy-wise, everything. Create all new characters, maybe even go away from Optimus Prime and Megatron.
Well, I'll have to cut it in right there. Well, when you say a reboot, there has not been a single franchise that I could think of where a reboot happened and they used new characters. It doesn't happen. There's a Spider-Man reboot. It's still going to be Spider-Man. There's an X-Men reboot. It's still going to be Wolverine and so-and-so. If there's, you know, if there's a Star Wars reboot, they're still going to, you know, end up with Luke and everything. Transformers, if they do a reboot, and they do reboots, you know, we had a G1 continuity up until Car Robots. Some say it's part of that continuity, but it was a reboot, you know, and then we went into the Unicron trilogy. That was a reboot. And then we went into the Aligned continuity with Prime or Animated. Those in themselves were micro reboots. There's always been reboots with Transformers. When you're talking from a toy standpoint, we go through those reboots all the time. We got another Jazz. We got another Rodimus. We got another, what else do we got coming? We had another Skullgrin that was just shown at SDCC. You know, so we get constant reattempts at the same characters over and over. So, I mean, to say Transformers is due for a reboot, you can only look at the movies and say it's due for a reboot, but we're still going to get a Prime. We're still going to get a Megatron. We'll just have some new human characters, maybe a Not Spike, maybe another Shia character.
Brett is absolutely chomping at the bit
go ahead.
Say something.
Well, first of all, I want to give credit to Don. Because at his age, remembering any of that stuff is just amazing. I tip my hat off to you for that. I mean,
he probably hasn't written on the palms.
That's
of
what
his
like 30, 40 years ago. I mean, wow, just
yeah,
wow.
It was literally almost 30 years ago. Yes, thank you.
I didn't even use a calculator, but anyway,
abacus in his case. No.
That's right.
Fingers and toes.
Okay, yeah. So it was something that you said about adding or molding or modding new. I that's why I think it's going to happen. You know, you get your MB10, and then you get your MB10 with what was that? It wasn't Teletran 1. It was the Vector Sigma.
Yeah.
And then you get, you know, your MP10 with your Spike with the Kung Fu grip or whatever. I mean, rock on. You know, I mean, I really think that's what's going to happen. I think they're going to take molds that they know are going to make money, and they're going to rehash them.
Well, now, I mean, I kind of agree with Dura on that. If we get a complete square one new look at the Transformers universe, I mean, this thing would have to be well thought out, well planned, not what like DC's been doing lately. You know,
animated.
I'm talking like, let's say, now this is just an example, so don't everyone go crazy. We have our Transformers universe. We need to shift something so radical, we wind up in the robotics universe. Because in the robotics timeline,
Don,
you know
what the hell?
Okay, I'm explaining.
Well, the only place you're
what
going
the
there is you have Peter Cullen and Frank Welker. That's
okay,
about it.
Okay, all right. Well, what I'm saying is that okay,
robotics. Thanks,
yeah, in the on the wiki page, it's basically been said that
it's connected.
Yeah, the robotics universe is the Autobots and Decepticons of their time stream. Okay,
I love Jesse Witherich to death. I love you, Jesse. But that the Vector Sigma asks things is just stretching that shit into that continuity.
But the reason I brought that up is that is when you go from Transformers to robotics, that is a huge, massive shift in tone.
That's all tied to Zoids, and they would never have the lights.
I'm just using that as an example. I'm not saying do robotics. Okay. I'm saying do something with that much of a paradigm shift, something so completely different for Transformers. It's a brand new start.
Why not reimagine Beast Wars again?
Here's my problem. Hang on a minute. Here's my problem with that. Love it. I love the idea. You know, reinvent the wheel, get going, this and the other. The problem is so many people are so used to middle of the road that you're going to get a lot of feedback. You're going to get a lot of feedback. I mean, think about all the feedback that the first movie got when Prime was blue with flames. Something as simple as that. They changed the truck. Oh, my God. Earth shattering. Okay. Something so small.
I have to just jump in here. See, here's one thing that you guys have to realize, and Aaron Archer did a panel about this at TFCon. He brought it up too, but this is something that's been known for a while. A lot of times with these big companies now, their primary goal, more than anything, is not to tell a story or to sell product, is to be able to be so iconic to a point that they could license the material to everything and it pays for itself. I'll give you an example. Betty Boop hasn't had new fiction, new material, new movie, new card for decades. But yet you go into any kind of like, you know, gift shop or stuff and you'll still find license plates with her on it.
Right. And you'll know what it is.
And you know what it is? They would, you have Hasbro in their boardrooms and their investors and stuff like that. For them to take such a left field direction on a brand that right now isn't in peril, like as much as you might, you yourself personally might be feel tired with it, it's not in peril, the brand right now. They would never go in. No. Beast Wars happened because they were coming off of G2. They turned to Kenner and go, you know what, guys? You take care of it. Exactly. They weren't in that transformer mode. Right now, Toy Biz was killing it with the Marvel X-Men action figures around that time. Power Rangers was killing it with Bandai of America. Transformers was not on the radar. They were. That's when you take a chance when you got nothing to lose. Right now, they're still flying high with movies that are making billions of dollars. So for them to take a risk, it would literally have to be like 20 years down the line. Movie 12 absolutely bombed in theaters on a Ghostbuster level, and then, only then, would they take that risk. Even animated.
Yeah, but you got to think, they diverted from the formula with
even
that.
Even animated, that was, in my opinion, was the closest that we've had to this point since Beast Wars of a diversion from the true, which is primes aren't primes and Magnus and this and a different art style and different this and redoing the entire universe artistically and storyline wise. But animated was only the way it was because animated was designed with the intent. What if this movie doesn't do well? Okay. That's why.
Okay. All right. This is basically, I'm going to use a more current thing that's been going on to describe what I'm talking about. Okay. We need a female doctor. And I'm saying that is a radical departure for Doctor Who. Is the doctor is going to be the 13th doctor has been revealed to be a lady.
I don't know why there's such a big deal about that.
I don't either. But I'm just saying that is a major game changer I don't see it, but to a lot of people it is. But I'm just saying that's kind of like the level we're looking at is something so radically is to us it's not radical. But to a lot of the fans, that's a huge radical thing. So I don't follow
Doctor Who at all. But I think that the only way that any of that will be justified is that when we get that female doctor and that series comes out, if it's successful, then you could then
right. State that but you know but what I mean? But I'm just using that as an example for a perceived radical change. Let's say we start over. Okay.
Okay.
Let's start on Cybertron. We follow Alita 1 and we start over again, but not with the art going to Earth. We start from the Cybertronian standpoint, so we're still in somewhat familiar territory. But we're in familiar territory, but we're looking at it from a completely different viewpoint. Yes. So I'm just saying that's what I'm saying by rebooting. It's familiar. The universe is familiar, but it's not a complete retread. It's something new. And again, I'm not saying this just to put female characters. I'm just saying Alita 1 with all of the people, all the Autobots, focus on that as this new restart, and then have the crew of the Ark show up later to change the dynamic for season 2, season 3. That's kind of what I'm talking about.
Wait, real quick,
Don. I put that up when you were talking about Doctor Who. I'm sorry. It wasn't because you were just now talking about it. It just now clicked up. But
okay.
That was for Doctor Who. Sorry.
Anyways, but I just wanted to just say, now imagine, Don, you're selling that. You're literally in a Hasbro, you know, business meeting with investors and stuff that they know what has been proven with Transformers and what the brand is aimed at. You know, and then you tell them, all right, here's what we're going to do. We're going to make the main character, the main leader, the face of the brand currently, because we're flipping it on its head, a pink robot that turns into a truck, Alita 1. Now, this is a voice brand. This is if they want to change it, she'll be red now, let's say, or she'll be like, you know, a neutral color of some kind. But if you then take that and you bring that to them and say, this is going to be the face of the brand. And then up to this point, they've been like, well, this brand has always been aimed at, you know, boys ages, you know, bada, let's say like 3 to 14 usually. You're going to get different kinds of reactions from the business standpoint.
Yeah.
You can give the argument, I think the Doctor Who thing, the only reason, and again, I'm not an expert in Doctor Who, and I don't want to say that I am, but I think in the case of Doctor Who, the reason why you shouldn't really bring that up is Doctor Who isn't a brand that has been aimed at boys ages 3 to 14 in a toy line. That's a more science fiction older audience.
Right, but
with
again,
it's a built-in audience that spans to the 70s, to my knowledge, right?
Right.
Correct?
But so, yeah, to 60s. But the parallels are still there, and I'm not saying my idea to do it right now. I'm saying when they're looking at needing a change, it's going to need to be something that dramatic. Wow. Like you were talking about, when the environment is right for a Beast Wars level change, that's something that – but I'm using that as an example of the level of thinking we're going to have to go to rather than just a reshell, recolor. But you know, ultimately, but what we've already got before, that's just what I'm saying. If that happens, it needs to be something very serious, very well thought out, set in a familiar setting, but different enough to be considered unique.
The thing is, though, is what you have to understand is that right now, especially the way Hollywood is right now and a lot of stuff, everything is so grounded in nostalgia and source material. I mean, if you look at Beast Wars, that's one thing. But look at Beast Wars' fellow power block companions at the time when it was on television. You looked at G.I. Joe Extreme, which was a departure of G.I. Joe and its mythos. You look at Ghostbusters Extreme and a departure of its mythos there. You had Vortex, which was more or less just a different attempt at Mask using the Hasbro brand. Everything was kind of just going in a left direction from established properties to do something fresh because all those properties had nothing going for them at the time. Right now, I feel like Hasbro doesn't have the cojones to do that. They really don't. I wish they would. I would love it if they just did a series that was only – I mean, to them, the most I could ever see them do is going, you know what? We're going to do a series that's only Bumblebee. Yeah, but we're still going to bring Prime in because we don't have the cojones to really take it that far. You know, like
– What do you think about their new – aren't they doing – the next movie is going to be a Bumblebee movie, right?
But did you just see – did you hear the budget that's
going to
be used?
$70 million is all they're going to spend on it.
Point being is, do you think they're going to be able to pull that off with just Bumblebee, or do you think they're going to like pop the other characters in?
At $70 million, that means there's probably going to be three robot characters at most, and it's going to be a slice-of-life human-based movie. And we're all going to probably be in for quite a surprise. Might be a really good human-based movie, but it probably once again will not be
the
Transformer movie. It's the same way how we, you know, and again, I don't want to go on another topic, but it's the same way how a lot of us enjoy the first Michael Bay movie, but it wasn't really a Transformer movie.
Right.
You know, it was just a not bad story that happened, had humans and army guys in it and stuff like that.
Right.
And by not
well, bad, I looked at it as more of an introductory story.
Oh,
which
yeah.
is what it was, and it had more, in my opinion, it had more depth to it than any of the other preceding
movies. Any of the other ones that came afterwards.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. But it's just, yeah, anyways, Duran probably wants to pass on this topic at this point.
Yeah.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, we let's change gears here and talk about some of the things that we've seen at SDCC. I don't want to spend more than 20, 30 minutes on this at most, but let's just talk about some brief thoughts and everything. We've seen some highlights of the Power of the Primes things and some more of the movie stuff. Let's focus on the Power of the Primes stuff because I think that is more what everybody was really anticipating. Most of the stuff that we've seen for the movies at SDCC, we've already seen before in pictures. So it's not really news. It was just seen in person. Don, you want to talk off? Because I'm sure this is really fresh in your memory.
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise of the show was, of course, Rodimus Prime. But we all knew Power of the Primes. Rodimus would show up somewhere. We weren't quite expecting a leader class that, because according to the videos and all the information out there, they want their leader class to basically be going from mortal to prime. So all the leader class figures are going to have this evolution theme going on where Hot Rod evolves into Rodimus Prime.
Rodimus Prime.
Exactly. Basically, that's what he was. That's what John Warden was saying is they want to They want to kind of capture that moment from the '86 movie when Hot Rod does become Rodimus Prime, and all the leader class figures are going to do that.
Well, especially each one of those Matrix, whatever you want to call them, Spark characters are based off of one of the original 13. Rodimus's Spark character is the 13th. So far we have Liege Maximo with Skullgrin, I guess you want to call him, and we have Rodimus with the Arisen or the Arisen, however you want to pronounce it, the original, like the 13th.
It'd be funny if Liege Maximo works with Thunderwing.
Yeah, well, they look like they all pop in together. Right. So.
Well, and that's something else that we were told about is that instead of just swapping heads around this time, each Spark Master has a different interaction with each different price point. Mm-hmm. So there's armor for the deluxes. There's like a buckler or shields for the Voyagers. They can replace the center of the Matrix for the leaders. So you still have that same completely interchangeable play pattern, one figure across all sizes, but instead of just swapping heads, it changes format on each level, which I think is a really great idea because you're keeping the play pattern, but you're also expanding it to something different for each level. We also saw the return of some Combiner Wars figures in Darkwing and Dreadwing. And they have kept their Combiner War ports, and thanks to Rob Clay and Chris over at RFC, they've done some research with the pictures, and they have discovered that the Starscream Voyager is a torso because he does have Combiner port mm-hmm. slots in his forearms and I believe on his feet, and it looks like the Jazz that we saw has some Combiner Wars connector points as well. So it looks like they're going to be they're still keeping the Combiner Wars motif on some of these reuses of these molds and reshells of these molds. So we will be getting that as a hidden play pattern. We've seen Beachcomber, we've seen Jazz,
which Jazz has so many redeco potential. I mean, you got Jazz, obviously. Then there's probably a Braver for mm-hmm. Road Caesar, Drench, a G2 Drench,
right?
G2
Beachcomber.
I with the remolded head, I can see Daytonas in it, and I don't see a lot of people mentioning that, but yeah, I can see a Daytonas Crasher.
GoBots Crasher.
Yeah, GoBots Crasher.
Fracture.
So, you know, I mean, there's so much I think that's the one tooling that they will use the crap out of.
Right. And the cool thing with Darkwing and Dreadwing is not only do they combine to jet mode, but you know Takara is going to release them as Buster and Hydra.
Yeah. Oh, that's a given.
And I will buy them. Yeah. Backstreet. So Night Sword. Thank you. Backstreet.
Backstreet would be a good one, because mm-hmm. Backstreet's
back.
Yep. So there's there's a lot of good figures we've seen. So we know the basic. But here's the thing: a lot of what we were talking about earlier in the week. If all the leader classes are going to be this evolution theme, who else are they going to do? We might see some really, really rare characters. Maybe like a Star Saber becoming a kind of prime, maybe an Ultra Magnus somehow becoming like a kind of prime. Thunderwing, you mentioned earlier, Brett, mm-hmm. I think Thunderwing, or you did, Daniel.
Brett.
That's possible. That's possible. So, So the leaders we're going to get could be really interesting on this whole evolution motif.
You know, everybody's oohing and aahing over that Starscream, and the jet mode looks okay, but for me the robot mode, it's like the giant. I understand they've got to work in the gimmick and everything, but the giant fists and he looks like he's wearing boots. And
well, that's part of the power up. The power up.
I get that. It just didn't work for me.
I thought when I first saw it, I thought it was a revamp of that leader class Starscream from the Jetfire mold. Is what I thought at first. You know, I mean that. I mean just that first glance. That's the first thing that popped in my head. I am a little more with the Starscream since it is going to be a torso. I'm thinking this is going to be our version of the Unite Warriors Galvatron kind of thing, you know, something along those lines that he can pick, you know, the reused figures from Combiner Wars and form a conglomeration of some to become somebody else. So it's a lot of good stuff we were shown. I wish we had seen more, but I got a feeling we're going to be seeing, like, if this was considered Wave 1 launch stuff, we're going to see Wave 2 at HasCon.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Your thoughts, Brett?
Huh? Oh. Yeah. I mean, I looked at some of this stuff, the Dreadwing and Darkwing. I always get this backwards. Is that right?
Yeah.
Dreadwing,
Dreadwing, Darkwing.
I always go Dreadwing, and it doesn't matter. Anyway,
we know who you're talking about.
Yeah, exactly. I saw those pictures originally, and I mean, right off the bat, they looked so much like the G1. It was scary. It really was. Just especially when they were in a combined mode, it's so much reminiscent of the G1 that I love that. I really did, and they've done so many G1. Recast or whatever to make them look just like it, that I love that as well. My favorite SDCC, I got it, reveals was actually some of the trailers they did, which has absolutely nothing to do with Transformers. So I didn't know if we wanted to discuss those or leave them for the end. What?
No.
There was a couple that were just, you know, your Justice League was amazing. Sorry, I loved it. So I was more stoked about that stuff than anything Hasbro Takara had to offer. But that's just me.
I'll be on board with Buster and Hydra, and I love Darkwing and Dreadwing as a kid. You know, and I'm in the mode right now where I'm selling off a lot of stuff, and I still want those toys. I said here recently, I think I even said it on the last episode, there's not a whole lot that's coming out right now that really gets me excited. But I have to say that Rodimus and that the Darkwing and Dreadwind, those get me excited. We know we're getting Overlord. That's been since last BotCon. Rumors have it that we may be getting a Deathsaurus. I would be definitely on board for that. With the looks of Jazz, it's a possibility we may have a Road Caesar. I would be on board with that. But, you know, outside of those things, excitement about it is I'm withholding judgment on a lot of it. The Starscream, it looks good in jet mode. Robot mode, not so much. It suffers from its gimmick, and I think that's what, like, a lot of Combiner Wars toys, the torsos suffered from the gimmick of having to be a torso as well. With the exception of Onslaught, which, you know, I think he probably pulled it off one of the best out of them. Onslaught and Hot Slot. Yeah, that's what we need hot to call spot. It. Yeah, that's what we need to call that mode, Hot Slot. Never mind. Anyway, Daniel, your thoughts on the reveals?
I feel that looking at these really makes me think a lot about how strong the Legends Takara side of thing is going to be. I stated on my Twitter and everything, the second I saw that Jazz, I was like, man, you pair that up with the Lambo mold from Menasor and the crew, you may give me a brand new giant dune buggy centerpiece that tooled to match, and you got yourself a Road Caesar, bam, mm-hmm. like that. Then you look at the next thing. Hey, there's Dreadwing, there's Dark Wings, that's Buster and Hydra. Pop those two together. They're called Dark Wings. That's the combined form in Japan. That's going to totally happen. Then in that same reveal, even though it's not really big news to us, there's Overlord staring right back at us. There's another, I call them the Takara 3, the Master Force Headmasters and Victory. There's another Takara 3 looking back right at us. You have that Hot Rod toy. Like Don said, you know, there's a possibility of other leaders that have that same, I want to call it that Power Master kind of engineering, where it's a smaller robot that goes into an armor for a bigger robot. If we didn't have a Power Master Prime already, I would have almost thrown in a Ginrai into that mix.
I think we are going to get one. They're going to redo it again. And I think they're going to do an Ultra Magnus that way too.
Well, we already had, there were some kind of rumors of some kind of Magnus that was shown to us. So Titan, it's a possibility. Yeah. It's the same thing with, I was talking with Wendell about this not too long ago. I was almost saying, like, you know, just like how I'm looking at all the others here and already predicting what the Japanese side is going to do. Think about that Rodimus mold. Stare at it for a second and go, what do you think Hasbro or Takara could do with that mold to get another mileage out of it? You know, they'd have to really retool the shit out of that to really get something new out of that, because Rodimus molds are very difficult to get a second character out of, usually, except for anime. I think that was the only exception. But in general, it's always been very difficult to get a second character out of it if it's not a black repaint. So, I mean, that's something that's going to be interesting too. You know, and then I think the weakest of it is, like everyone else mentioned, that Starscream. I mean, we're just going to get repaints to death. Pick your color of the rainbow, bro. You know,
I'm guessing thing. Black and teal is
you know, but that's what I'm trying to say. You know, just point at a rainbow, hit a color, and you got your character.
Yeah, but everyone knows it's much cooler if it's black. Come on, black repaints are where it's at. Or is that 290s?
Now, if they do an SG Rodimus Prime, some kind of exclusive.
Well, I'm just saying with the Starscream, it's just like that's going to get repainted to every Seeker possible. It'll probably get a retool down the line. I mean, we saw it already. Leader class, you think this big expensive price point of, well, in Canada, $69.99. How much is it with you guys? $49?
Yeah, I don't know. About $50.
One thing is true. Tekatron, he said, well, Daniel, they sometimes come up with some surprises and re-engineering.
Oh, yeah.
And that's true. Absolutely.
I would say, I was talking about that when I was saying, like, the only thing I could think of is if they take that Rodimus and they do like the Springer treatment, where you look at classics, whatever you want to call it, Generation Springer, and they just totally just from ground up turned that into a Sandstorm. You know, like that's the craziest side by side I could think of in terms of engineering.
Ultra Primal just said that they could remold him heavily as Armada Optimus Prime. That's a lot of retooling, but I guess it's
a possibility. What I could see is the way that I see it is we don't really know how much you could get rid of that Hot Rod and put in a different mold into that. We don't know how the toy's engineering is. We don't know if it's Armada Optimus Prime where it's pants. It's pants for the toy.
Right.
So maybe you could re-engineer something into that. But it's just that's kind of what I'm looking at right now. What I'm presented to, I dig it. But I'm more looking at the future face value of the stuff that's going to be presented to us down the line, because there is so much potential on the legend side of things. I mean, I'm even looking at the Dreadwind and Darkwing. And going like, yeah, these guys don't have a headmaster gimmick because they're based in Combiner Wars molds. But I totally could see Takara packing these guys with Titan Masters based off of Buster and Hydra that transform into their heads just so you could have that extra gimmick, you know, that you still have drivers. And just like how with the Ginrai, we're going to get a Minerva, you know, and a Go Shooter, even though we don't have bodies for them. So it's – I mean – if you're someone who's really into Master Force, wait it out and see what Takara is going to do with these things, because I think there's big plans.
Sure.
Absolutely. So before we wrap up, I want to ask the two people who were present at TFCon Canada, how was your time there? Daniel, let's go with you first.
It was pretty crazy. I think the best panel that almost no one saw because it was a ticketed panel. Aaron Archer did this panel, which was called Aaron Archer's Workshop in World Building. And it was so vague what it was. And only like about 13 to 15 people paid tickets for this panel. And I think it was like an extra $40 to get into this panel. But what this panel was the first, it was a 2-hour panel. It's like, you know, you sit down with pad and paper. It was a world building session. But what he showed us, and I told Aaron, bring this to TFCon DC. He showed us tons of stuff that was under NDA with Hasbro that was not supposed to be shown to nobody because it was stuff, all these proposals for Transformers series that didn't happen. And each one of these proposals were filled with tons of art that we've never seen before. And it was like, oh, we're going to have this story where it's a group of Transformers. And keep in mind, everything that he presented, bits and pieces of it ended up getting used later on in Transformers. So here we go. We're going to have this Transformers series led with this character called Thundertron, right? We know where this goes because that's where we got that boy. And he's going to lead this group of Transformers that they and he comes from the planet Diclon, trademark, you know. So right away they're trademarking that. And they're going to travel from planet to planet, Gobatron, trademark, planet Junkion, trademark. And the planet Junkion, it's almost kind of like Cybertron where it was going from planet to planet. They're going to go to planet Junkion, and the planet Junkion will have a subline of three Junkions with three different heads. Gee, what did they do with that later on? You know, and then like this character named Lockdown is going to come around. Gee, wonder what they did with that later on. And this character Crumple Zone, it's this crazy proposal, and he's showing all these different characters, and it's like he's flying on this ship, and the ship that they showed you later on, the designs got used for Lockdown ship in Age of Extinction. The back of the ship had this squid that detached named Taco Tank. Gee, wonder where that came from. It's great, and he's showing all these images, and it's funny. I don't know if any of you guys know Mark Schaefer. Mark Schaefer's a regular at BotCons and TFCons. He was in that panel with me. And every panel that Aaron was showing, screen that Aaron was showing, I was going like, oh, shit, oh, shit. And Mark, with his, like, you know, his accent, he's like, well, Proto Man, if you're saying oh, shit, then it's got to be something new, you know? And it was just all this stuff that we've never seen before. This whole panel was just 2 hours of that. And it wasn't just Transformers. He was going like, here's how we're going to fix G.I. Joe. And here's all his proposals of how to fix G.I. Joe with tons of art that never got used. Snakes and Shadows, a Snake Eyes and Storm Shadow miniseries where they're fighting ninja robots. And it was such a great panel. And I told him, bring it to TFCon DC, do it again. We're going to advertise it better this time. So that people know what they're getting into. And he had tons of stuff that he didn't show in the panel this time. Like he had like all these papers and stuff because he's not with Hasbro anymore. So he has all this stuff now that he could show. And it's incredible. Like that panel blew my mind. I mean, the rest of TFCon, hey, we had Devastator. Arthur, he has yet to do a Transformer convention. He was quite the character, you know, as entertaining as a guy who's 72 years old, who hasn't done this thing in a very long time could be.
Oh, the voice of Devastator?
Yeah, the voice of Devastator.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's funny. You get him outside the table.
Yeah.
Outside. He's funny.
He's quite.
Did he remember doing anything about
Devastator? Oh, God, he's quick.
He's quick.
Yeah. He was hilarious. We had also, again, like you haven't really seen him much. And since I think like it was, God, which BotCon was like 2004, the voice of Tarantulas,
Alec Willows.
Alec Willows, you know, who hasn't like made a Transformer convention appearance in a very long time. So there was a lot of guys that were like, you know, making their reappearance to the public of the fandom after an absence over a long period of time. And these were, you know, in the case of Devastator, Arthur Berthard, I can't pronounce his last name. Yeah, you know, someone like him that has yet to make an appearance within the fandom outside of a DVD box set extra, you know, so someone like him was cool to have. It was a great show. If I had one like gripe about it is the new, because we've grown so huge because of the absence of another convention and then those dealers needing to be, we had to move, we had to like have more space for dealers, and it was a learning process. Which is something hopefully will be fixed by next year through figuring something out. But, I mean, that's the only complaint. But otherwise, I mean, guests were great. Scott McNeil was great. Everyone was just, you know, it's your, anyone who's ever been to, I call it the TFCon Prime. Anyone who's ever been to, like, the Canadian TFCons, because they're smaller, they're a lot more wacky and fun. The environment is always built for that.
Well, I got to ask. On a scale of 1 to 10 Scott McNeils, how Scott McNeil was Scott McNeil this time?
Well, Scotty actually did a singing concert for everybody and taught us all that he has an amazing singing voice. And I could, there, if you want to see footage of that, it's on my Twitter. I posted it. I didn't know that this guy could sing. This guy's got an amazing singing voice. I was like, whoa, this, you know.
Well, and okay. And showmanship.
Well, because, that's just it.
On the auctions. Halfway through the auctions, I'm sitting in the back because I come there late, like always, I'm late. And everyone in the front is bidding. So he's like, I don't hear anything from the back. So he runs to the back, and he just starts prompting everyone in the back, come on, bid,
Scott
bid,
McNeil
bid.
Made people buy a cardboard box that had his face on it for $30.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
We're talking about nothing. And
yeah, like literally – Like the stuff that was
it was for charity.
The crazy thing with the charity auction, that's why I always tell people come to the charity auction because you get deals. I put together I was in charge of the charity auction of like sorting stuff and putting things together. I put together a box of almost 100 movie toys, and there's not a single double in that box. And it's leader classes, Voyagers. There was like the $79.99 Age of Extinction Optimus Prime leader class. Just a box of 100 movie toys practically sold for $40.
Yeah.
$4 Canadian. You know what I mean? And,
well,
and when that sold,
it all went to charity. All of it went to charity.
Yeah, but that blew my mind. Then Scott's like, here's this incomplete 1996 Rat Trap. We'll start the bidding at $30. $30. We got $35. We got $40. And I was like, what the hell is going on here?
That's not the worst, but I'll wait till it's my turn. But go ahead.
Yeah, there was a lot of great deals. Again, there's almost too much stuff. Like there's so much stuff every charity auction. I'm so grateful for everyone who donates because it goes to a great cause, but it just shows how much people are willing to part with something that they invested money in for that greater cause. And the amount that we get it's unbelievable. Cause my job, like I have to check everything and I'm surprised, not a single broken toy. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, some maybe were missing a missile here and there, but there was no broken toys. Like, we were getting complete Titan Return stuff that were just opened and messed with once. We were getting complete expensive third-party stuff. Ares was there, was one of them, the third-party Predaking. A lot. And Cheerzian donated a brand-new Masterpiece Megatron 2.0 to be raffled off to everyone who donated to the charity auction as an extra incentive. I mean... It was pretty crazy. That's probably my favorite part of TFCon is the charity auction because it also helps me as someone who sells to get to gauge what's popular now and what has kind of fallen out of popularity with the fandom. But it also helps me, you know, see like, you know, the interests, you know, like what's, you know, like I never see, like, well, I'll tell you this right now. Didn't see many animated toys being donated. Beast Wars toys being donated, which still I stand by my theory of the two most popular things still, but yet everything in between, including G1, tons of Unicron trilogy, Prime, movie, all of that was donated like crazy. So it still also helps me gauge of what is still important to people to hold on to.
Right.
So. What about you, Brett?
Well, I got a little different perspective. I went up there as a dealer and attendee. I'll start with the silent auction, which goes to charity. And that was the first thing I did. as I walked over there and I saw a guy with three little sketches.
Silent auction. Just to cut in, silent auction for people that don't know is whatever doesn't sell at the actual charity auction is then rummaged and then put into a silent auction after.
Well, this was first. I did Friday. So this might have been from last year.
Oh, maybe it was last year's charity auction stuff. Okay.
It could have been. In any case, there was three little, and here they are because I want them, little trading cards that someone did back in 2016. And it was, animated Bumblebee. I think that's animated Black Arachnia.
Yes, it is.
And then the main reason I bought it, Deathhead. And, I mean, it had a $10 bid. I'm like, I threw $25 on it and didn't think about it. And halfway through Saturday, I come back and they're sitting on the table with a little note saying, hey, you won these. Please play. I'm like, okay. So I went over and paid. And I actually talked to, who's the guy? I know him. Ian, right?
Well, is he glasses?
The one always wears the sports coat and everything.
Yeah, that's Ian.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, Ian. He like knows everyone. And he went over and he won this, you won this, you pay me later. And I'm pretty sure no one skipped out. Everyone paid, because silent auctions. And it all went to charity. But just three little, trading cards that, you can't find these. These were made by an artist. Stuff like that. And then I went to the auction, which was funny because I was sitting in the back, which Scott McDill came by and just was poking and prodding everyone. But I went a different route. There was a couple things I tried to bid on, but I do know for a fact that there was a box of G1 stuff with almost a complete Metroplex.
Yes.
That went for like $40.
Yeah, and again, G1, like that surprised me. Well, that was a good box of stuff too. That had a Perceptor in there.
Yep.
It had smokescreen. It had a lot of stuff in there.
Right, and everyone's going to be like, why didn't you bid on that? Well, I would only turn it around and sell it, so I wanted it to go. And then I saw the movie toys, and I actually saw that ahead of time, and there was a ton of stuff in that. And I saw the guy that actually won it, and he was very, very happy, and he made there was probably – $200+ worth of stuff there.
More than that. Honestly, if
well, he was I go conservatively with the movie stuff, but still, there was a lot.
He was selling everything at $2 a piece, he easily had $200. But he would definitely get more than $2 a piece. I mean, to give an example, the ice cream twins were in there. Those guys go for about $30 today. They're one of the few rare exceptions in there. But I just threw it in because it's a loose movie toy. I wasn't going to just auction them on their own in the auction. Right.
Now, the funniest thing out of the whole auction, and that was great. Everyone got great deals. It all went to charity. It's all donated. Good, 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 good cause. And I really hope they do that again in Washington. But the best, the funniest was the balloon. You forgot the balloon. So someone did a balloon of a Waspinator.
Of a Waspinator.
That looked nothing like a balloon of a Waspinator. It literally looked like a yellow and green balloon just wrapped together, and Scott McNeil autographed it. And it went for like $30 or $40.
Anything
and you're like,
that Scott
really?
Touched. Anything yeah, that like, Scott
really?
Touched.
But it was all for charity.
Automatically went for like 100% more than it was ever worth.
Right.
You know?
Now, that was fun. I'd have to say out of everything, and I had a ton of fun because as I've said before, I go to conventions, I go there, and it's kind of like work, and you go through the motions, and you have downtime where you get to meet people, this, that, and the other. But in Canada, for some reason, I have probably the most fun. It's just really relayed back, and I see a lot of people that just are happy to be there. It's not like I'm going through the motions of going through Line Con or pickup line or whatever. They really, really are just happy to be there. And then they're happy to for the guests, for the exhibitor room, for the panels. They're happy all the way around. I mean, it's just, it's amazing. And it's probably because, you know, Canadians are always just so happy. I don't know what they put in the air or whatever. But it's just very, very neat atmosphere.
Less sugar.
I guess.
So, that's probably it.
So I go outside.
Less sugar and less caffeine.
And there's Scott McNeil smoking a cigarette. You know, shocker there. And
every voice actor smokes. Spoiler. Yeah,
and I didn't know who he was.
Blows my mind.
I'm not on the voice actor like you are, Duran, but Devastator.
Arthur Burkhart? Yeah.
He was outside, and he's talking to Scott. And I kid you not, and I'm not going to use this as a ploy to get him back or whatever, but we just happened to be there right when he said it. And he's like, Scott, are all of them this fun? And he's like, man, yeah, man, they're easy, they're fun. He goes, well, you've got my number, and you call me when they call you, and we're going to do it again. This was a lot of fun. He did. He was just like, this is just fun. I love doing this. And then they actually started turning around, and he's like talking about how they did a like a band, and they needed a drummer. And he goes, well, I can drum. This dude is like, how old is he?
He's 72 right now, I believe.
And he's like, I can jam with the best of them. I can get up there. He's just talking, and we're just like, whoa, slow down.
You know what's funny? Because like one of the complaints that we had about him was – every single person he talked to, I almost lost everyone there. Every single person he talked to that weekend, he talked to them for like 10 minutes.
I could see that.
He was like, yeah. He was so well, stoked.
He was so stoked because
it was his first time ever really doing something like this. And I mean, you have to understand from another perspective outside of Transformers. He was Destro in G.I. Joe.
Right.
The guy to the left of him was Michael Bell,
yep.
Who was Duke. So right, Duke. To the left of him was a guy that he worked with constantly for like a good solid 5 years. And for him, like he's doing a convention and here he is with, you know, Michael Bell that he was working with consistently. And also there was the whole other factor of, you know, Wally Burr passed away not too long ago.
Well, and interesting conversation about that too.
Okay, well, if you have something, that'd be great. Yeah,
I'll brief it very, very much because I don't want to really. It's not something I was privy to. I just happened to be there. But basically, there was a little bit of talk about getting yourself out there because you don't have a lot of time. That was kind of like the consensus of it. And he was one of the guys. He was just like, I can't believe – he talked to me. He was just like, I can't believe I waited this long. Is it always like this? Yeah. He's like, yeah, man. It's like – and he was talking about, you know, the times that – he even mentioned Slagicon. And he was just like, you know, they do anything for you. They go out and get – you know, you want a beer, they'll get you a beer. You want some smokes, they give you a smoke. You know, you take a break.
We tried to get him – the very first Chicago TFCon. Like we've been trying to get him for years. It's just he's kind of like what in the case like Frank was or Ian Corlett,
yeah, exactly.
Where it's just they were kind of like, I don't know. And well, then they finally get it. They finally do it. And then they're like, oh, now I get it. You know?
With Frank, I remember this by talking to Pete and everything. And they were like, he was just like, I don't know. When they made the offer, he called Peter and he was just like, what's this like? And he's like, just do it. Get on the circuit. Just do it. You'll love it. They take care of you. It's easy. It's fun. The fans are great. And one of the things, if anyone knows anything about Frank Welker, is that he was kind of – and he wasn't really a germaphobe. He was the – what is it about crowds?
Claustrophobic.
He was just afraid of crowds. He was afraid of a lot of people. And so – I remember I was on the security staff for that when he first got there, and I even talked to him. He's just like, you know, I'm good, this, that, and the other. And then when these girls would come up and they'd want to hug and everything, he would be really – but he loosened up, and he got the idea. And now, what, he's done like 3 or 4 now? Easily?
Oh, he's done – yeah. He's been like Texas Comic-Con, BotCon, right. TFCon.
Alamo.
Now he's going to have HasCon coming up under his belt, you know?
So – it's one of those things that these guys really need to – and once they get in there, they go through it and everything. But you're talking about a resource that is limited. It really is. These guys are getting up in age. Yep. And if you can get a chance to go out there and meet, I'm saying this to anyone that's listening. If you can get a chance to go out there and talk to these guys, if you want to get their autograph, talk to them, whatever, do it now. Because there may not be a tomorrow. I mean, I hate to be that way, but it's the truth.
This year we lost Dick Gauthier and Wally Burr. You know what I mean? Two guys that have done both TFCon and BotCon in the past.
Right? Dick wasn't all that old, was he?
Dick, when he got to TFCon 2013 or 12, he was already wheelchair bound. Oh. So he was already kind of getting there. But he lived a full life, let me tell you.
Now, Dick was Rodimus Prime, right, in the series? Right?
Rodimus, Serpentor, Harmony the Robot, and Get Smart.
I remember Serpentor, right.
Yeah.
But my point being is that, you know, now's the time. So when you see a convention, if it's closed and they got these guys there, if you've always wanted to meet them, don't wait. I am the perfect example. I said over and over again, I wanted to meet Leonard Nimoy. Guess what? I'm never going to get to do it.
I'm not.
And I'm really upset about that because I had one chance and I didn't do it because I thought there'd be tomorrow. And it didn't happen. So don't be that. Don't do it.
Well, I think we've had some great discussions here, and we'll talk more about TFCon maybe in the next episode.
And we had great exclusives. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes.
No bias.
For those of you who are wondering about Captured Prey and the issue there, they are safely back in the United States.
Oh, God, what happened with that?
I can't go into full detail.
Okay, we'll talk about it afterwards, because, yeah.
That's crazy.
But they are finally back in the United States, and hopefully things are resuming back to normal very soon. For any further updates, check out CaptureProey.com on that. So unless anybody has any closing thing they need to say, Don?
The only thing I'm going to say is, in case you did not hear the news, there was some leaked card art yesterday from a...
I know where this is going.
Yeah, from a fairly reputable track record history site from China that we did see the Titans Return RC card.
Are you happy about that?
I'm cautiously...
With the registered name for the headmaster, Leynad...
Yes, Daniel.
But again, it's a toy in a it's a toy in a series that's ending in a wave we know nothing about.
Yep.
And HasCon is coming up and is showing no Transformer exclusives as of yet. I am cautiously optimistic, but this thing could easily turn into a Hasbro's biggest troll of me in the past 23 years.
Don, I gotta ask. If it does happen, an actual Headmaster RC, which it looks like it is, if it comes to be, would you actually sit and cry? Would it be happy tears?
No, because I think at this point, it'll be just a relief to get a character that should have already been made at any given time in the past. I mean, it shouldn't have taken this long to get a character from the movie, not even as a headmaster, just a regular RC. And it took us how long?
My God, they did one out of the G1 Chrome Dome.
Oh, please don't.
So they had it in mind.
Yeah, but that was,
terrible.
Yeah, it was terrible.
It doesn't matter. It was still there. My point is that it's on the radar.
So in case anyone on TFYLP that watches the show, I am happy. I'm cautiously optimistic, but like Generations RC, until I see it on card, in stores, in my hand, on my shelf, I'll believe it when I see it.
And with that, I think we'll wrap it up tonight.
I have one final thing I want to say. Just one little thing. And that is about conventions in general. And the fact of all those guys, anyone that's going to HasCon, including Daniel, maybe, good luck. I'm glad to hear that you're going. Let me know all about it. However, I think that given that there's very little information on it, whereas we've had many information, a lot of information on such things as TFCon Washington, good luck. I'm more than happy to hear about it, but I'm not willing to put forth the effort on that one.
Absolutely. Well, we will see you next time on TFYOP. Check us out on Twitter. Follow us on Twitter at TFYOP. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/groups/TFYOP. We'll see you on online and next week, everybody. Good night, everyone.
All right, everybody.
Later.
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Lighting, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening, and we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.